They're coming to get you, Barbara. They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Chief, if I were surrounded by six or eight of these things, would I stand a chance with them?
Well, there's no problem. If you had a gun, shoot them in the head. That's a sure way to kill them. If you don't get yourself a club or a torch, beat them or burn them. They go up pretty easy.
Are they slow-moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Those are lines from the cult classic Night of the Living Dead, filmed around Pittsburgh on a budget of less than $115,000. From the late 1950s to the late 80s, independent horror films were one of the most influential genres for budding filmmakers in America. Here in Pennsylvania, independent sci-fi and horror flicks springboarded the careers of people like George Romero and our first guest, Tom Savini, without the need for big Hollywood bucks. I'm joined now by phone by Brian Albright, an author who has traced the development of regional independent horror and science fiction films all over the nation in a book titled Regional Horror Films, 1958 to 1990, a state-by-state guide with interviews. He joins us to share stories of this region's strangest films. Brian Albright, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Happy Halloween.
And to you. And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. What would you like to know about your favorite low-budget horror film? Brian Albright can almost surely answer your questions at 412-246-2002. Brian, what can you say about Pennsylvania horror films? How would you classify them?
Well, you know, with a lot of the films made in Pennsylvania, certainly George Romero's operation there served as sort of a ground zero for a lot of other productions, not only his own, but obviously the films Tom Savini has made in that region. And a lot of other folks who worked on Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, went on to make their own films in that area. But even before that, you know, there had been some pretty prominent films that came out of Pennsylvania, like The Blob and The 4D Man back in the late 50s. So there's a pretty rich history of independent filmmaking and specifically horror filmmaking there.
Now, what were the biggest indie films that have come out of Pennsylvania, independent horror movies?
Well, that would easily be, you know, The Blob in 1958, Night of the Living Dead about 10 years later, and Dawn of the Dead, which would have been in the late 70s.
And let's go back to The Blob. That is a film that was made near Philadelphia, I believe for the most part, in a town just outside of Philly called Phoenixville. And there's an interesting story behind this and how they got Steve McQueen even to be in the film. What can you tell us about the backstory here?
Well, The Blob has a very interesting backstory. But, you know, at that point, there were a lot of these sort of low-budget science fiction films. Most of them came out of studios like Universal, American International Pictures, Allied Artists, those types of companies.
Right.
The Blob was made by a religious filmmaking group called Good News Productions, and they were in an area called Chester Springs, Pennsylvania. They actually owned the entire town. It was a group of missionaries. And they made films for other, you know, missionary organizations and religious organizations, but they weren't making a lot of money. And the founder of the group, a guy named Irvin Yeworth, teamed up with a guy named Jack Harris, who was a distributor in Philadelphia, and they decided they would make a mainstream science fiction film, and that would make a lot of money, and then they could use those proceeds to, you know, make more Christian productions. Steve McQueen had actually been dating an actress who was in one of their previous Christian films. And when the producers went to New York to find some actors for the film, they were having trouble casting the lead. Well, Steve McQueen had been to Chester Springs with his girlfriend, and he knew them. So they're walking around New York, and McQueen's out walking his dog and recognizes them, and they start talking. And he says, "Oh, you know, you've got this film going. I'd like to be in it." And he was about, you know, he was maybe 27 or 28 at the time, and the part was for a teenager, a high school student. He said, "Well, we think you're way too old." But he read it for them, and they thought, "Well, it could work. He's the best actor we've seen since we've been in town." So they wound up casting him, and he came down to Pennsylvania to make the film. And it was either his first or second, you know, major film role.
Now,
but all because they saw him on the street walking his dog.
Well, very fortuitous for them, but maybe not so much for him. There's a story I've heard, and you can tell me if this is true or not. Apparently, He was offered a cut of the film, and he turned it down because he didn't think that the film was going to be any good or really amount to much. And it was either that or a flat, I think it was $3,000, and he took the $3,000. Is that anywhere near true?
Yeah, I don't know if the amounts are exact, but you know, at the time, you know, making one of these films was pretty hit or miss. It, especially an independent film coming from Pennsylvania, there was really no guarantee they'd get any sort of wide distribution outside of whatever Jack Harris could do for them on the East Coast. But as it turned out, they got picked up by Paramount. And the film was a huge hit. It played TV, you know, late night television for years and years and years, and became a big cult item.
So he lost a lot of money by accepting it.
He might have lost some money depending on how many points they were going to give him.
Right, I suppose.
Right.
And what made this movie? I mean, you look at it now and you wonder why. I mean, as a kid, I remember it scaring me, but you wonder why it seems scary now, like a lot of other horror films. But what made it successful? What made this little movie out of Pennsylvania, turn a profit?
Well, you know, at first it was in color, which was unusual for that type of film. That gave it a lot more opportunities for distribution in some ways. It was also, it was made sort of in dead earnest. The monster is goofy. The whole idea is sort of ridiculous, but everyone's playing it very straight. Steve McQueen and a lot of the other actors in the cast, particularly the folks from New York, were sort of trying to channel James Dean from East of Eden or something. So there's these sort of weird, very underplayed performances. They're not over the top as a lot of these low-budget films might have had. They're not hamming it up on camera. So it's fairly low-key. Parts of it, you know, the part where the old man gets eaten by the blob and his dog is very sad, that actually almost works sort of emotionally. The title is very memorable. The monster is... There were a few other giant gelatinous mass movies here and there, but it was somewhat unique at the time to have this weird blob rolling around. So I think it was just sort of timing. There was some good craftsmanship to it. The guys who made it knew how to make a movie. They hadn't made a horror film before, and that's the thing about a lot of these independent regional films is you get to see folks that aren't necessarily getting any sort of influence outside of their own knowledge. Sort of apply that, you know, if you've never really made a horror film, what would you come up with if you had no interest in doing so? And these were guys who didn't want to make a horror film but found themselves making one, and so I think their take on it was a lot more interesting. There was a bit more melodrama to it than there might have otherwise been.
Well, before we take a call, I wanted to listen to just a clip of the theme song from The Blob, which is kind of, well, I don't know. We'll let the listeners decide if it's either scary or campy. Here it is.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob.
Yeah, you could, hearing that, you could turn that into a Broadway musical, I think.
That's right. That's actually a Burt Bacharach tune. It was one of an early composition of his and Mac David's, and it actually charted. It was on the Hot 100, Billboard's Hot 100, November 1958.
I can see why. Brian Albright, an author, joining us, author of a book about regional horror films throughout the nation, called Regional Horror Films, 1958 to 1990, a state-by-state guide. Let's go to Chris and Moon calling in. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh, Chris. You're on with Brian Albright.
Hi there. Thanks, Paul. And hi, Brian. Listen, I had a question. Well, in a way, the song you just played is sort of an example of the art of the horror film commenting on the society it comes from. And I'm just wondering, back in the late 70s, which I remember far too well, life around here was pretty dismal. The economy stunk. All these unions were going down, and everybody was unemployed. And that's sort of when Dawn of the Dead came up. But I don't remember any other time before that, in this area, where there was, in fact, a kind of horror industry. And so I'm just wondering whether or not, from a psychological point of view, moments of trauma in a society, such as, for example, Godzilla coming out of the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. Does that apply to horror films? Or am I totally on the wrong track?
You know, we do see occasional, I don't know if anyone's really mapped this too much, but there have been, there tend to be when there are periods, I guess, sort of a, maybe economic malaise, a lot of horror films might come out during those periods. You saw that sort of in the 30s during the Depression. And in the late 70s, there was actually a fairly large boom in horror films. This is during sort of the beginning of a fairly deep recession. You saw not only Dawn of the Dead, that came out around the same time as Halloween, Alien, Amityville Horror, Nightwing and Prophecy, and a bunch of other films all sort of came out at the same time. So there are some, you know, some periods of where there seem to be a lot of horror films coming out during particularly maybe culturally traumatic periods, but it doesn't always map exactly. And I think Dawn of the Dead was probably more reflective of society at the time than some of the other horror films that came out at the same time. But I think that was pretty purposeful on the part of George Romero.
Brian, since by the way, Chris, thank you for the call. Brian, since your book spans 1958 to 1990, I have to ask you about one of my favorite low budget films, and this may be one of the lowest of all time. But I think it was made right about the time that your book storyline starts, 1958. A film called Screaming Skull that we used to see it on TV here in Pittsburgh when I was a kid. Do you remember Screaming Skull?
Yeah, I know Screaming Skull. That was
you're pretty enthusiastic about that one.
Yeah, and it had a. It was one of the there was a few films like this, but it had a life insurance policy promotion where if you. If you died or something like that during the showing, then some company was going to put up money so that to pay your family if the film killed you.
and you know, there were all sorts of crazy promotions like this. For by the way, did Screaming Skull live up to that billing?
A few minutes of it. There were long stretches and not a whole lot going on in the Screaming Skull. But the ending's pretty good. The ending of that movie's pretty good.
So, what were some of the outrageous ways that people tried to promote their low-budget films?
It would vary. They might have giveaways at the theater, like barf bags or bags of blood or vampire teeth or something like that. There was a film called Dracula versus Frankenstein, and during the promotion in New York, the producers hired people to dress up in monster costumes, and they had a protest in front of the theater where they were sort of protesting the mistreatment of monsters in film. And there's a clip of it you can find of very young Geraldo Rivera standing in front of this group of people in rubber masks, reporting live on this monster protest outside of the debut of Dracula versus Frankenstein.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. Of all the films in the era that you... that your book spans, 1958 to 1990. If you had to pick one or two, what would you say are the best or is the best low budget independent regional horror movie?
Of the regional films, geez, if I had to pick one or two, it'd be hard. But Night of the Living Dead is probably one of the most influential of the whole batch. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was made in the Austin area, would definitely rank, and Friday the 13th from New Jersey. And then another New Jersey film I like a lot that wasn't necessarily influential but is very good is a film called Alice, Sweet Alice. It was one of Brooke Shields' first films.
We have less than a minute left, but, digital filmmaking has created opportunities for a lot more filmmakers than there used to be. Where do you see this genre heading?
I think we'll probably see a lot more of these types of regional productions, hopefully getting some more attention. It's very easy now to make a pretty good-looking film with the technology available. It's just a matter of do you have a decent script and some good actors and decent lighting. But the gap between what professional filmmakers and what amateur filmmakers are capable of doing is narrowed now because they're using basically the same technology, just the folks with millions of dollars have a better version of the same technology. That was not the case, say, in the 80s when people were doing shot-on-video films.
Sure.
The difference between a well-made film shot on film and a low-budget film shot on videotape were tremendous. But now that gap is closing, and there are a lot more people getting involved, and hopefully we'll see a lot more interesting films coming out.
Author Brian Albright, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Coming up, Elaine LaBombe shares some haunted getaways. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.